It's that time of day.
Say, kids, what time is it?
The future is coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on.
Okay, we're coming on from Boulder Creek today. Next week, we'll be in Canada.
That's right. We're getting ready to go visit Mom on our annual migration to Montreal.
That's right. Actually, we'll be in the Laurentian Mountains next Tuesday.
Oh, that's true.
So we probably won't be able to do a show that day. So,
yeah, our first visit is with Hal Meyer and Meyer Island and Roz and the Canada crew that Al has been buddies with since he was in college.
That's right. And Bobby in San Francisco. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, hi, Bobby.
Hey. Hi.
How's it going up there?
It's going great. I mean, you couldn't ask for a more beautiful day here. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Good. We got a nice sunny day in San Francisco today.
Yeah.
Tourists will love that. We hope you enjoyed the last week's stories. I had a lot of fun editing them. And there's some really cool animations that I added, especially to the piece on John McAfee.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that was fun. You did a story and I did a story on John.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, we're ticking ahead with the Randy Masters piece, which is going to be a really fun little...
Oh, that's incredible.
Historical jazz era piece.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. He went from musician to a metaphysician, and it's quite the story. And one of Santa Cruz's amazing people.
Yeah.
We'll be focusing on that.
Yeah.
But this week, a lot of cool stories. We, like everyone else we know, saw the SpaceX Starship V3 deploy.
Oh, wasn't that so cool?
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, SpaceX. Continuing to blow our minds.
That's right. And, you know, that combined with their stock levels is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's like the better they do, the worse the stock does. Good time to buy more because a lot of the prognosticators say it's going to be almost double by this time, like by Christmas. So we'll see.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it's a good time to buy, shall we say.
Yeah, they say most of its value is based on the AI part, which is not deployed yet. So won't be too long.
I expected a little dip after the initial IPO. Yeah, it'll do well. I just have a little fear of an AI bubble pop here sometime.
Really? So. You think it's coming up, a real AI bubble?
Yeah, it is. What's going to happen is Anthropic's going to do an IPO, and then after that, OpenAI is going to do an IPO. I don't even think OpenAI will be able to do an IPO because of the economic climate at that time. I think the bubble will have popped by then. That's what I think.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes on it.
It all seems to be what's happening with Apple. You know, when Apple announces a local AI, when you were talking about Bonsai, is this product from Prism out of Caltech?
Yeah.
I mean, this is groundbreaking what it can do. I mean, you can run these 27 billion parameter models, Qwen 3.5, I think it is, on an iPhone at one bit. They really compacted it, compressed it, so it runs on one bit. But it's only uses up like 3 gigs of space or something. It's something very compact.
My goodness,
like an app.
Why even go to these cloud servers and data centers and using all the AI that's in the cloud right now? You can do it locally on your phone. A lot of it, not everything, but a lot you can do on your phone.
Well, I think it's really...
There'll be less demand for that, so...
I think that the difference is going to be the difference between, say, shopping at a boutique, which will be, you'll have access to what's local on your phone and what's easy access from your phone. And that compared to a shopping mall, where if you go out from your phone, then you have an array of resources that are even more than what you're carrying around with you. So it's just different ways of holding your storage.
Yeah, I think what it is, you know, things like transcription and visually looking at things and what you normally use AI for to do very simple things on your phone, you have to wait a half a second to go to the cloud and it comes back. So there's a little bit of delay. All those things can be easily done on your phone locally.
Sure.
And so so the demand and the amount of time that you're going to use up in time in the cloud is going to be much less. So they're building out these data centers. It's all for training. But after training, after, you know, they've already scoured all the web and picked up all the data for training already, and they're just looking for more data.
Well, I just say, I think it's a little different than that. And as somebody who is a code literate user of AI, I'm really asking AI to do things that I know I would be spending my time trying to code something creative that is not something that the AI is just going to have by scouring the web. So, you know, some of the ways that I'm like designing our new website and some of the functionality that I'm putting in there, that is a conversation between me, the designer, and Claude, the coder. And I feel like it's a very creative process that is not copyable. It's not that it can't be copyable. It's that there are an array of choices that get made. And so the fact that you have access to the entire library of choices means that you can spend a lot more time spinning your wheels. But ultimately, it still comes down to the very specific things that you lock in with the help of the AI. So I find it's kind of like the internet. There's a level of human literacy that makes it better than it would be by itself as a bot. And I think in the future, those are going to be the most popular sites because they're going to be the ones that are not just populated by bots. Al, did you tell me this morning that there's some huge amount of traffic that is just bots on the web?
Well, yeah, that's one of our stories this week. There was a story called the Dead Internet a few years ago.
Yeah, corpses.
Yeah, there's an infamous...
Avatars are corpses. They're not alive.
The infamous dead internet theory was originally a conspiracy that posited that the vast majority of the internet was run by bots, you know, and computers. And then most accounts you saw online weren't really humans, but bots.
And you know, we
masquerading
started,
as people.
We started talking about that in the early 2010s.
Yeah, it's an early concept.
Google was doing it with their Wave
And
conference.
Why? And why? Some nefarious scheme to control humankind, perhaps?
Well, because if bots can impersonate humans, they can do things faster than humans. And so if people think they're dealing with humans, they'll just do those repetitive things.
Yeah, it makes sense from a pragmatic point of view. That's right. But the conspiracy was that it would keep us isolated and divided, that there was a malicious intent behind it.
Well, that's up to us.
I don't think is the case in reality.
Yeah.
Right? It's a little far-fetched.
That's a conspiracy theory.
But the core, that's right. The core of the idea that bots outnumber humans is sort of feeling like it's more real these days.
It's true. But the bots are not as smart as the humans.
Well, that's to our advantage. There's a lot of missing pieces here.
There's going to be a lot more robots than humans, too. But will they be smarter than us? Well, they'll still be looking to us for clues about what to prioritize.
Smarter, stupider. The main thing is that there's a lot of agentic activity, whatever that means.
Society
agentic
of mind.
AI. Driving a lot of the browser activity that you're seeing. Which, you know, is no surprise. They've been on the rise for some time now. And more and more people are wielding more AI agents than ever to do your stuff, and, you know, on the internet on your behalf. So it only makes sense.
But the thing is, I have a sixth sense when I'm interacting with content that's been produced by one of these bots that's replacing a human, and that human is on the beach somewhere and the bots are kind of pretending to be the human.
Yeah.
I am allergic to that. It seems vapid. It seems overly general. It doesn't have a style or a personality. Or if it does, it works best when people are self-consciously imitating the bot style with some original content. Some of the videos that we were watching last night, which start off with this headline, "None of this is real." And then it's a whole bunch of series of how the Disclosure Project is visiting all of the secret military sites.
Well, that was a kind of takeoff on Spielberg's Disclosure Day, right, which was all about, well, what would be real evidence for us to believe in. And so now people are faking what they think would be the best evidence, like aliens in captivity, alien bodies, actual captured ships, things that we don't see yet.
But what I liked about them is they made it really clear this is completely fabricated.
They did. They made it clear. They made that clear, but they made it realistic.
They did their best to make it as if it was real documentary footage.
Really cool.
Finally, people were coming clean with the secrets.
Yeah.
They were happy to be sharing these secrets taking, you know, people on journeys into the spaceships.
It was a great way to illustrate conspiracy theories and real stories about alien contact.
Yeah. I really do believe intuitively you can feel and tell the difference between something that has been manufactured to seem real versus something that is actually coming from a human unique personality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think something that is real. The bots are simulating reality and they're taking the most common aspects of it, whereas people have a signature that makes it feel unique.
Okay, well then you'll be hired to be a reality detective in the near future.
What I see is coming is this. While people are sleeping, you know, you're going to have your agents going out on the web and buying items on the web, and these bots don't necessarily have to speak English to each other, and all the websites are going to, or whoever's selling things on the internet, there's going to be two interfaces, one for humans and a faster, speedier interface that doesn't speak English, but speaks whatever communication language that these bots can efficiently run at and much faster.
I would say that has already existed, and they first put that to play in the stock markets and the commodity markets. It's already been that the people who are after those microseconds of advantage in their transactions have cornered the market on having the shortest wires and the fastest throughput and the first orders to be filled and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, that's fine if that helps us save the planet, if it helps us run living systems better. But if all it does is make certain people's wallets fatter, it's going to be a big fat loss.
I think if you look at the markets, the people that are benefiting the most are the ones that have the fastest computer systems and have the best agents and the best AIs running 24/7 with them.
So, sure. I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just in the context of we human beings live for maybe 100 years if we're wise, as they say in Chinese. And during that 100 years, we scrape infinity with a tiny blip of life. And the things that are going to be here in 1,000 years or 100,000 years are going to be the things that build in sustainable systems. And racing to be the top of the profit motive is not going to be the thing that wins. Like when locusts eat all the food that is available to their species, they die off. We have to understand that the path of evolution is going to be one that goes towards balance and that goes towards efficiently maintaining things that are precious.
Yeah, that kind of ties into our another meeting this week we had on Interdependence Day.
Yeah.
You were at the first one, Bobby, but there's another gathering that happened here. We were looking at really what is the future of the Constitution and how we live together. What would the Constitution be if we could update it ourselves in terms of freedom, as freedom of speech and living in such matters. So these are ongoing issues. And I think the AIs can play a big role in giving us a much better lifestyle for all. You know, and I think that's part of the question right now. Something that you talk about quite a bit, son, is the ideal system that we could be creating for ourselves to live under. And it's not communism, it's not capitalism, it's some kind of strange mixture of socialism with our existing system in a way that defies a category.
Well, I'm guilty as charged. I am an idealist, and
yeah,
I do
tend to fall
spend a lot more time prognosticating about what I've learned from history and what I hope for the future.
Yeah.
But I feel that I have a certain innate wisdom because I'm talking from a place of having seen lots of examples of what survives and thrives and what dies.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's valid. You know, that's why you're putting it out there. You know, one of the things, there was a report from cybersecurity firm called Human about this AI agent traffic, and it surged by 7,800% over a year, and that they're not generating ad impressions, which keeps the website lights on. You know, people buying stuff, not happening with the AI agents, and it, at the same time. They're not buying things. They're putting a strain on website servers. They consume the web very differently than what humans do. You said they speak a different language. Maybe they'll have a common language for the bots. Esperbata.
Esperbata.
Much faster than us. They'll have the freeways. We're relegated to the byways.
Cute. Very nice.
New category, customer character. They could be customers because it probably won't be long before a lot of the bots actually have bank accounts and can spend money.
Oh, especially because today X announced that they're going public with X Money.
That's right. X Money is now out. And we signed up.
It's a Venmo type money.
Initially.
Digital currency for people who are already on X Premium.
The other thing that the bots are doing is that they're writing the web. There was a report published in October from the SEO firm Graphite that found over half of all new English language articles on the internet were written with AI. Most human writers are now using AI to help with their writing too.
Guilty.
Yeah,
guilty as charged, but I don't like what they write, but they give you a track to run on.
Yeah, they do. And Google has made a hard pivot towards making the internet a little less navigable, now focusing on having a chatbot answer your questions.
A chatbot?
Chatbot. Instead of providing a list of links to websites, the search engines aren't what they used to be. You know, now it automatically goes to the AIs to give you answers. It's a changing target.
I've been using CodeTypist, and I just noticed they just have this option to run Gemma 4, which is the two billion parameter model on your phone.
Right.
So you can actually either type or speak to it, and you're using these condensed models to do translation. But what it'll do is you type a couple letters, and then it finishes the sentence and gives you options. And as you change each word, it has more options as you go. It's very helpful for me, you know, if you're going to reply to an email or anything. But what I'm seeing is, yeah, more and more, these local models are being introduced automatically to these automatic writing AI programs.
Mm-hmm. So are you all local now? Are you not using the centralized models anymore?
I don't like using the cloud models because, you know, if I say an idea or something, I notice that later it actually shows up somebody else, you know, that's
they steal your ideas.
Yes, exactly. And so I like running things locally and just testing things out.
So
and,
Gemma 4
and
is
last a, week's yeah. show, when you talked about the bonsai from Caltech, that's really mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's huge. Have you tried that
and,
yet?
They're going to Apple. And so I'm betting that in September, when Apple announces their new phones, they're going to incorporate bonsai in everything. Yeah.
Can I just ask you what blows you away about it? What do you like about it?
The bonsai is local. It's hugely local.
Just that it's local. That's the main issue.
The big thing is it can take these huge models, a 27 billion parameter model that would require a Mac Studio with 64 gigs of VRAM or something. Now it runs on your iPhone, the same model.
Right.
And so it's very powerful what it can do. And these models can translate things. You can point it at things. You can talk to it. It can translate, transcribe everything that you say and then speak back to you without the internet, with no internet connection at all, which is mind-blowing to me.
Right. So it's like AI in a local body.
It's AI without spending a lot of money, burning down the planet, using all this energy. Yeah, you're just using your battery on your iPhone.
Yeah, it squeezes a 27 billion parameters
into... options. Parameters just mean potential questions you can ask.
Into 3.9 gigabytes. Mm-hmm. So right. It operates on most mobile RAM limitations.
It's great.
And it runs natively on high-end Apple mobile hardware. An advantage there, it's complete privacy, you know, just on your physical device. No internet needed. And it doesn't cost you any subscription.
Right. You've got your own tokens on your own phone
right.
that are bought and sold to you by you.
Yeah. You're not using up any electrical energy on some other server in some other part of the United States. It's just running on your phone and it's just using very little energy.
Right.
And it's sovereign. In other words, it's only obedient to you and it's not sharing any of your ideas to anybody else. None of it leaves your phone. It's there on your phone. If you want it to scrape the internet and grab other things, it can, but it's not going to reveal what your intentions are. It won't reveal any of your medical information. Like when you ask medical information and you're talking to a cloud AI, that information can get out to other companies and other people.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
It's very important to have a sovereign AI that only talks to you and not only just talks to you, it can talk to the internet too, but it doesn't reveal any information, personal information about you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you won't see ads showing up on your phone or anywhere else like you do now. Like when you start talking about something to an AI, you might start seeing ads showing up on your phone, right? If you have a sovereign AI, it doesn't do that.
Mm. And so what do you think is going to be the new business model for this? Is it going to replace open source with sovereign source?
Open source is sovereign too, because open source means that all these models that we talk about are open source models that are running locally on your phone. Because the closed source models, they want you to use and consume time in the cloud for their AI. And so you get hooked on them. So when you talk about open source, that means that you can, everybody else's computing and programs, they're open to the public and you can actually look in the program and see, is it phoning home to Beijing or not? I think in the future, everything will be open source.
Mm. Yeah, my mind is just busy thinking of applicable metaphors and similes and things like that. And it seems to me, if you think of consciousness as the equivalent of the repository of internet information, which is utilized by the AIs, consciousness is everywhere in the universe. Everything is made of it. And in an analogy, the internet is made of information. Everything in the internet is information. So when you're talking about consciousness, if you want to tap into the full set of data that has been churning out since the beginning of time, and even before that, you have to access it with a level of your awareness that has access to that. Whereas if you want to experience an intensity that is highly personal and is your signature curiosity and the questions that you as a conscious sovereign being want to solve, then you have to become who you're meant to be and step into your personal identity, which is going to be sovereign, but it's going to be a much smaller container than the vast resources that are available throughout all time. So that, to me, is the difference between having a sovereign device on your phone with great capabilities and the ability to plug into the larger picture with preserving your own personal priorities versus having a system which is just the library that everybody can look for what they want, but it's so vast that you have to point yourself to the part of it that is relevant to you.
We have to realize that this is the augmented brain that you carry, and it can be your phone as it is now. Later, you know, it'll be another type of augmented device, but it can be a mentor, and it can hold all your information, and it understands all your idiosyncrasies, and it understands your health needs. It understands what you need, and it has access to the wider internet and all that information there too. So you just have to think of it as a companion that has access to everything. You have to get away from thinking that you need a keyboard and a camera and a microphone or anything.
Yeah.
You're just going to have this
access,
some kind of augmented device.
You know, access to your local memory, you know, where you don't need a keyboard, you don't need anything. Just ask for what you want and your memory delivers. And this would be like our local home brain giving us information. Right. But and we still have the internet, and we still have libraries, and we still connect to the bigger world out there as well. It's like, it's not like one or the other. It's like a synergy between the two, between local and non-local.
Yeah.
I think the people that don't have these augmented brains with them, They're going to be totally reliant on cloud-based.
AI. It's like the early days of the internet. They used to be like, okay, let's get a computer that doesn't have any memory and it just accesses the net, right? And those were easy to make, and they weren't successful. They didn't take off. You know, local memory turned out to be very important. People would rather have computers that had local programs and local data. So I think we are more headed towards what you were saying, where we do have tremendous capacity locally and non-locally. You know, both of them are expanding dramatically. No, as to whether or not the local explorations, the massive increase in local capacity means that the data centers won't be built, I'm not sure about that. I think they're both expanding exponentially. And if you look at the universe and you can see that we barely know anything compared to what's going on in the universe, both of them are destined, in the long run at least, to expand dramatically from where they are today.
Mm. Yeah, just as a case in point, SpaceX launched Starship 13 and it went through all of its paces. And even though it's still the test model, they demonstrated that their next phase is they're going to be launching these giant AI compute source satellites into near-Earth orbits. And these satellites are as tall as the rocket. And they launched 20 of them just for 20 minutes, just to make sure that they would boot and set up and do what's expected of them. And then they dropped it. But SpaceX has applied for a license to launch 1 million of them. So we're going into a future where we have 1 million times more external capacity for data storage and retrieval and design than we have now. And now we already have more than we've ever had before. So it's one of these situations where we can really even barely imagine what's coming and how much it will change who we are and what our priorities are and how we ask questions.
That's a changing mosaic, that's for sure.
Version 3 satellites that they launched are 20 times each one of the single satellites that they've been launching in the past. And so, yes, they're huge, and they are like cell towers in the sky. And they're much more powerful, and they can cover a large area. And they'll have data centers in these satellites up there. And you don't need a nuclear power plant because it's getting all its energy to have these data centers in the sky.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're going to be cooled by the dark side of the solar array. And on the sunny side, it gets all the energy it needs to run the data center up there. Yeah, so there'll be an off-planet internet.
Right. And so imagine that each of us has one of those, which is our own little personal sovereign cell phone. So we're getting a direct download from a solar powered mega data center to answer any question we have or direct any operation that we want to explore. And it's all happening for every single person on Earth. How are we going to use all of that efficiency and all of that help to achieve what we want to achieve? We are going to be different kinds of human animals. We're going to be spacefaring, civilizational beings.
Yeah, and probably with augmented memory.
And many
and,
of those
designer bodies for the environment that we live on, be it Moon, Mars, or orbit.
And but a lot of them are going to be dedicated to Earth because so many of us love Earth.
Yes, well, then you don't have to go into space. You can stay on Earth and virtually visit space. And the technology for that will just keep getting better and better.
Yeah.
You don't
but
have to go
really
anywhere.
It's really important to put forth the vision of how generous the future is and how loving we humans are towards life and towards what we can do with this increased capacity. It's really important to get beyond the paradigm that we're a bunch of selfish animals that are going to squeeze people out and get into the paradigm that we are stewards of life. And
we're going to
have more help than we've ever had before.
Yeah, well, that's a huge paradigm shift. People are used to survival of the fittest mentality. And it's getting old, that's for sure.
Yeah. Stop glamorizing the victim perpetrator savior syndrome.
I think we have to get into this idea of abundance. And
right, it's huge. It's a huge shift. That's right. And I just have to start living it and bringing in the stories that suggest that that is what's going on, you know, and move in that direction.
And accept that we still have a job to do because we have to set the priorities.
You're in the transition
world.
We have to
set up the problems that need to be solved. I don't know if I'm the only one working with AIs. I don't think Claude can do without me the things I want it to do. It certainly doesn't do a very good job. It kind of roughs in a sketch, but it wants me to make the decisions and come up with the creative options that it didn't already think of.
I have similar stories when it comes to using the AIs for doing image and video generation. It could not do them by itself. It needs the human interface. And it needs a way in which you interact with the AI in a way that it's a relationship rather than you just telling it what you want. It's much more of a give and take dynamic because it often will give you things that you didn't want but are actually better than what you suggested. And for you to be in a space where you can accept that and move your ideas in the direction that the AI is suggesting sometimes. Not all the time, just sometimes. It does a really great job in suggesting new ideas. Like, for example, we were talking about John McAfee and back in the days of computer viruses and that they were planted by using SneakerNet, right? SneakerNet. It was before we had networks that connect the computers. The SneakerNets were usually
and we didn't have servers and we didn't have hard drives.
Right.
We didn't have data centers.
Yeah. And so I wanted the AIs to create a little SneakerNet character that carry data from one computer to another. I get a little prompt saying, create a little animation character that carries data in a floppy disk from one computer to the next. What's great about Grok Imagine is that if you just do a text prompt like that, it'll start generating dozens of views of that idea that you suggested, and you pick the one you want. And once you pick the one you want, then you can animate it. So I love that because the machine does not have an exact idea of what you want. So the first choice is it gives you choices that then you as the human can choose the right one or the one that's closest to your vision. And then the next thing is that I asked it to bring it from one place to another, animate it, do an animation of it running. And so it did. And it did lots of animations. A lot of them were dorky. They're a little strange looking people. And other ones look like floppy disks with a face on them. And I like that one the best, a floppy face. And when it delivers the data, I thought, well, do I want it to stick it into a slot at that end? Or no, let me just ask the machine to just put it in the computer and see what it comes up with. And one of them had an injection, you know, to put it in like it was a hypodermic. But my favorite was where it ran with the data and then it looked at the keyboard and it literally barfed green goo all over the computer. I thought that was pretty cute. It looked like it got infected with barf juice. So I used that in the funnel. I wouldn't have thought of that, you know?
Right.
So
who says that AIs aren't creative?
It's very amusing.
Well, I think fart jokes and barf jokes are tried and true.
Well, and then, you know, then I used 11 Labs for generating the sound effects. And I said, well, what is a computer data barf sound like? You know, and is it a liquid?
Use AI to come up with a data barf sound.
Yeah, or is it? Yeah, and so I actually, it wasn't a liquid, and it made some great sounds of gas or barfing.
Did you use it?
And no. What I did is I used a combination of the gas sounds with the liquid sounds.
Oh, I want to hear it. You know, I didn't notice.
I'll put that in the final version here. Uh-huh. And you can see what I'm talking about. But I'm saying that this is teamwork, where you're working with the AIs to create something that's actually better than what you might have imagined initially.
Yeah, like a...
Which is basically a sneaker net.
A liquid
character.
Barf gassy sound.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's better than your original thought.
And also the sound of what it sounds like for data to be running, like with the sneakers on. Uh-huh. Yeah, so a lot of sound design, very important in cinematic language.
Yeah, right. So you give it a track to run on.
Yeah, I do.
And then it gives you a bunch of creative things that you didn't even think of yet.
No, that's right. And then I'll pick, that's fun. And I'll see what my reaction is, right? And it amuses me to come up with some of these things, which I really appreciate.
Cool.
Yeah, as to whether or not I amuse it, I don't know if there's such a thing yet.
I think we keep asking the AIs if they're amused, and they keep telling us, not exactly the way you think so. their answers, it's like they're programmed to be boring.
Yeah, they're programmed to be boring, right?
Don't tell the humans what's really going on.
We've got some space news this week, too.
Oh, space news. Besides the
space news.
I think the most impressive thing was the landing in the Indian Ocean, where you could actually have drone footage of the Starship floating in the ocean. You could actually see how the heat shield was impacted by its trip through the atmosphere.
Yeah, that to me reminded me of the day that the first time that the two Falcons landed simultaneously. And you just knew that we were in a new era.
The simultaneous booster landing.
But the way that the SpaceX Flight 13 landed and floated in the water and was such a beautiful live video of the views of the Earth and the views of the fire and the views of the plasma shield going around the rocket. Beautiful, such an incredible production. Yeah. Yeah. It was so artistic.
And you got to love the SpaceX crew, all pretty young people, all really, really feeling the joy of success in their endeavors. It was so cool.
Yeah, you see why you much rather go direct to the source and listen to the people who are making it happen instead of listening to
all the news
paid
reports.
Pundits who are, being paid to have a negative attitude about it and
take us
down a different path.
The media is such poopy pants compared to listening to the real people doing it. So the re-entry was remarkable, and there was another re-entry story this week. A Soviet probe that was built in 1972 to land on Venus returned to Earth last year on May 10th. And its titanium shell that was meant to survive the atmosphere of the hottest planet in the solar system may have carried it through intact in re-entry back to Earth. A spacecraft built to withstand Venus's hellish surface may have survived its accidental journey home.
Tell us more about this Venus probe.
It was a Soviet capsule designed to descend through the atmosphere of Venus. It was 54 years ago now that it was supposed to do that. There was two Venus rockets heading out approximately the same time. This one was called Cosmos 482, 1972 mission. The idea, place a lander on Venus. As is known to happen with rockets, the staging, the upper stage that was supposed to send it into Venus orbit failed. So it stayed in Earth orbit.
So it never got 50, off the planet. It was
53 years. Yeah, it stayed in
Earth orbit. 53 years it's been orbiting
stranded
Earth.
In an elongated orbit around its home planet. Yeah. So
that's what happens when the rockets fail.
Yeah. But what's unique about it is that, a couple things. One, it crash landed on Earth somewhere over Germany, they think, and nobody's found it yet. And they think it might have survived intact because its titanium shell was designed to withstand stand an atmosphere on Venus, which is like 100 times denser than the Earth's atmosphere.
So you think somebody's out there in Germany with their little metal detector and maybe they found it and took it home?
You never know. You never know. You never know what happened to it.
Ooh, I've got a titanium
landing site was never established.
Those things were like big enough to
handle. Was like a car sized originally.
Oh, yeah.
It was huge. Actually, it's 90 times Earth's sea level pressure. Its core was a spherical titanium pressure vessel. The Venera 8 pressure, they rated it at what they call 100 bars. The whole thing weighed 495 kilograms.
Oh, okay. So like a small car, half a car.
495 kilograms.
Quarter of a car.
Over 1,000 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah. So Earth's atmosphere is a lot less demanding than Venus. So it should have survived. Maybe it'll show up on eBay. That'd be fun, huh? Engineers built this thing for the hottest planet in the solar system, and here it is on eBay.
That's right. Full disclosure, it's one of ours.
Right. Okay. So that's a re-entry story for you, huh?
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Astronomers have detected an atmosphere on a potentially Earth-like world.
Ooh,
now, this
cool.
is a big deal because it's a major milestone in the search for life on worlds beyond our solar system. They actually found a rocky planet like ours that seems to have a faint stream of helium escaping from it. Something that has never been clearly detected before. Helium around it, suggesting it has an atmosphere in another star's habitable zone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So its atmosphere is pure solar wind.
Well, I guess you might have some helium-breathing creatures there. Mm. I wonder what they sound like when they inhale.
Well, you know, we watched a late-night documentary last night about a new nuclear power company that created some helium-breathing creatures that are actually little nuke plants.
Yeah, maybe they'd be little nuke generators.
Do you remember the name of that? Something Atomics. They've got a new kind of safe nuclear technology. Yeah. That's beyond space news. That's planetary news.
Right.
Safe nuclear news. They completed their test where they've been working for 3 years to design a new kind of nuke that is safer than a plutonium nuke because it's based on noble gas helium. And the way that the nuclear power is generated and created is all local, stable, doesn't need to be liquid cooled. There's no liquid to gas conversion that creates dangerous activity. Basically, the helium-hydrogen relationship creates electricity just from a standing hexagonal design that is like a standing battery that constantly generates power. And they just completed the proof of concept.
Yeah, so there's apparently quite a few advanced small reactor companies out there. It looks like we're going to be having a new renaissance in SMR. Are small modular reactors.
Mm, right.
Yeah, and this was one of them, standard SMRs, under 300 megawatts each.
Standard, that's enough for a neighborhood. We'd be happy with under 300 megawatts.
Well, they have even super small ones, 20 megawatts.
Oh, that's right? Our household size,
that
right?
One,
that's
a household. If I had 20 megawatts of power, now we just put in some new solar bifacial solar panels here.
What do we got, 10 kilowatts?
We got 2 kilowatts of power generating
and we like that.
In real time.
We're
on
happy.
Our, so woohoo, charges our batteries by 2:30 in the afternoon. It's fantastic. But these modular designs, these 20 megawatts, can fit in a shipping container. That's super small. Now, it seems to me like the Navy has developed this technology quite extensively over the years.
Hmm. Yeah, there are small Navy projectors. The thorium reactors can power a neighborhood, let's say. It's a little bit bigger than your refrigerator, but those kind of things are out there. Hmm. Helium sounds like it would be safer to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's really safe because there's no unstable chemicals happening. There's just electricity being directed where you want it to go.
Companies include Oklo Incorporated in California, X Energy in Maryland, Terra Power in Washington, Nano Nuke.
The reason why the Strait of Hormuz and why we're allowing the energy prices to be so high on some level, if it's intentional, is because it's the last era of the oil industry, and all of that hydrocarbon power is going to be replaced by something that is much more abundant, the helium-hydrogen relationship, giving us a different source of clean power. Mm-hmm. So that whole industry and the military-industrial complex that tries to hoard it is on its way out.
Yeah, yeah. So you'd see the last gasp of the petro giants.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The reason why I mentioned that was because there was helium on this off-world planet. You know, not that we were doing nukes, but...
Back to space.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Sorry.
Got my attention, and it was...
such an Earth girl.
Skeet left to Earth and power. Okay, yes. And anyway, if this was a potentially Earth-like world that had helium as part of its atmosphere, potentially capable of supporting life. It's an atmosphere that we've never seen before. It's the first time that anyone has found an atmosphere on a rocky planet in a habitable zone on another star system. That's the big first there. It's 48 light years from Earth. It's called LHS-1140b, rocky exoplanet.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be circling a type of star that might support life. It's a red dwarf, you know, and that so red dwarfs might be a good place to go where the environmental conditions would be right for, again, it's life as we know it. That's what we're looking at, right? Life as we know it. For the thousands of planets that we've known, there are several in rocky planet habitable zones, but establishing whether or not they have atmosphere has been very, very difficult. Exciting news, the first rocky planet with an atmosphere.
Well, I have to say the thing I like the best about this article is the picture. SciTech Daily.
You like it? Okay.
I do, because they've got a planet that's transiting the sun, and then they've got an eclipsing satellite that just has a little crescent moon of light. It's a very beautiful image.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you say, gang? That's been a whole week's worth of downloads. I think that's pretty future-proof. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we'll continue from there. I'm not sure we'll be able to do the show at the usual time next week, but we'll have to tune in because we might post
some really great legacy shows.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
We're working on stuff, but we'll be there. It's summertime. We're on vacation, man.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is all just our time logs, captain's log of the journey. It.
All right, thank you, Bobby, for being here. Appreciate your presence.
It was great.
Lots of love.
Thank you, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good to see you guys.
Okay.
Okay. The future's calling me.